Morning, KBOO. How's it going? It is 8:02, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap, and on the line with me is the lovely, majestic, amazing, brilliant Althea Billings. How are you, Althea?
Hello, good morning. I'm well. I'm happy to be here to get to speak with you. You know, great day for good radio. you know, all the good stuff like that. We have a great show lined up today. We're going to do a little bit of a news roundup in our first half. Frequent listeners of the show know that we like to break things up, so Tammy and I will be chatting about some local news items for the first half hour, and then in the second half hour, we have our community questions. So we'll have folks call in for our discussion topic, and boy, is there just a lot going on in our local little world here. But before we jump in, I would like to do a quick little plug. We are in our fall fun drive right now at KBOO, and KBOO is such an important community resource. We're your spot to hear about all of these important local news items, great discussion, great music, culture at every hour on the dial. So if you've been thinking about potentially contributing to KBOO, if you want to become a member, if it's that time of year to renew your membership, now is a great time to do it. You can go to kboo.fm and click on the donate button, or we got a text option now, guys. You can text KBOO to 44321, and we will welcome you into our community and giving us some support and some help. So Tammy, yeah, let's get into these news roundup items, shall
yes.
we?
Yes, thank you, Althea, for the intro and for laying it out. I appreciate it very much. And the first part, the news roundup, is going to be quite interesting. A lot happened this week. A lot is happening all the time. I think we might as well. You know, I think precedented times are just not the jam anymore. So with that, yeah, Althea, if you want to introduce our first two news stories.
Yeah. So the first one that we wanted to talk about is the Clean and Safe Contract. Which basically, what is the Clean and Safe Contract? There are these districts in parts of Portland called enhanced service districts, where businesses that are in that area pay extra taxes to get extra services. So Clean and Safe is one of the subcontractors that provides those services. They're supposed to do like graffiti removal, extra, you know, garbage cleanup, and security services. And Clean and Safe is the one that does downtown. And they've had this 10-year contract, and for 10 years, people have been, you know, complaining about how they're harassing houseless people. And then just last year in May, the city auditor's office found like little to no oversight by the city on who these security officers are. Are they armed? What are they doing? Just like pretty egregious stuff when you're talking about, you know, people who could potentially be carrying lethal force, and who are they being, like, the city doesn't have oversight over them, right? Because one of the wrinkles in it is that, you know, folks in this area are paying into it in order to get these extra enhanced services in downtown, but it's sort of taxes, and so like the city ferries the money to Clean and Safe, but Clean and Safe is like essentially owned by the Portland Business Alliance, or they're very closely tied together. A lot of the revenue that Clean and Safe generates gets funneled into the Portland Business Alliance. So there's a lot of gripes, even for folks who say, you know, like, we appreciate the services, you know, like extra garbage and graffiti cleanup is really needed in downtown, but is this contract working? And so the city council has been deliberating a five-year extension or a five-year contract renewal. That would be $25 million. And obviously community members were not super stoked about that. So I pulled two clips from yesterday's city council meeting. The final vote on it got moved to next week because there was, I mean, actually, I don't know if it was because there was so much like outcry from the community, but we'll go to our first clip here. This is Forrest from Portland Democratic Socialists of America.
This is Forrest Perkins. I'm with the Democratic Socialists of America. Last year, the city auditor, Mary Hole Calabaro, published a well-distinguished audit of Portland's enhanced service districts. In it, the city auditor concluded that Portland's three ESDs were inadequately transparent and accountable to the public. The report called for a review of the districts, their purpose, and the city's responsibility for oversight. In the years since the audit was published, city officials have done little to take these findings seriously, instead offering platitudes about supporting the auditor's recommendations on governance and accountability. This draft today flies in the face of the city auditor's recommendations. It does little to clarify significant questions about how public money flows between Downtown Clean and Safe and the Portland Business Alliance. Just now, we had the Clean and Safe representative say they are, quote, independently governed, and then the next guy who goes is the president of the PBA talking about how this, about the services they will be providing. There's also the question of how renewal meetings between the PBA and the city remain private, or how the public can access records about private security patrols. This is an absolute capitulation to the PBA. What happens on public space and uses public money must be accountable to the public. My biggest concern is about the hired rent-a-cops that patrol around and serve only one purpose: to harass our homeless neighbors or anyone having a mental health crisis. One finding from the auditor's research remains pertinent. It describes an account where city auditors investigated questions of accountability and oversight over the role of Portland Patrol private security officers. Portland Patrol's owner, John Hren, a retired Portland police officer, resisted the oversight. He had a conversation with Robert King, the mayor's outgoing public safety advisor, and told King not to release information about security officer oversight to the public. This is exactly the sort of interaction that reflects the city auditor's recommendations. We are all aware of the temper tantrums that cops put on when even a tiny amount of accountability is waved at them. The last thing we should do is add even more armed goons to our streets. Thank you.
And that is Forrest from the DSA talking at the meeting and just really making a lot of sense. Where's the accountability? It's really quite frightening that just the way that, you know, the government is structured here, there, like the local government, it just, I don't know, like, how this is even possible, but we are, the reality, and this is only for downtown. So, you know, we have other parts in town that have their own, I don't want to say enforcement, but, you know, they have their own mechanisms that serve the same purpose. In like early, I think it was like 2008, I don't want to misquote their name, but it's like the Montevilla Business Association or something. They got a lot of flack for doing some pretty outrageous things to our homeless neighbors there, and they stopped. But this is definitely like, another piece in a pattern that, or another act in a pattern that we keep seeing in the, like, perpetuating violence when it's like almost like a Trojan horse. So you're coming in and you're saying, we're doing this to beautify the neighborhood, we're doing this to beautify everything, and it's kind of like, well, yeah, we kind of need that, and the graffiti is pretty outrageous, you know, all around, and, you know, it's, but that doesn't, I don't understand how they can conflate removing graffiti and trash to harassing homeless people and houseless community. So yes, a little bit of sense coming from Forrest and DSA. But yes, Sophia, please go on ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty egregious. Well, and here's a note that I have another clip to play about this, and then we can move on to one of our other news items. But that, you know, the reason that it's a new contract is there are, you know, supposedly revisions that are meant to address the city's or people's concerns, I should say. And one of the things that they said, they said, oh, you're worried about there being too many, like, you know, security officers who, you know, in this audit oftentimes found that they often do not, like, identify what agency they're with. They're stopping people. People don't know who they are or why they're being stopped. They're saying, okay, we'll fix that. We'll have just 15 officers on any given shift, and only 25% of them will be armed. And one of the things that a lot of people brought up in the city council meeting was like, there's no in the contract, it doesn't, like, there's no, like, is that better than before? Like, you never told us how many there were previously. How many is that, more or less than there, like, how meaningful is that as change? Was something that folks really didn't understand. And one of the pushbacks that they got, you know, people who are saying like, hey, don't renew this, or if you are, renew it for a year and actually fix the contract, they're saying like, oh, well, we have to do it because, you know, community members haven't brought another option for us. And people are like, wait, what? Why is it like community's job to figure out how to make, like, to fix a problem that's for business owners in downtown? Why is it everybody else's job to come up with a way for them not to, like, be abusing houseless people and overreaching on their authority?
That's their job. Are you kidding me? It's like that makes no sense to me. It's like you write a letter to the city about some potholes outside your house, and then the city comes up to you and they're like, we'll do something about it. It's like, what? But this is what you're supposed to be doing. What are you talking about?
About a city something. Government or something.
It's like, wait, yeah, are you promoting anarchy? What's going on here?
I'm supposed to fix my own problems now. Do we have time to do that second clip, Jamie?
Yeah, sure. If you want to give it an intro, and I'll go ahead and play.
Yeah. So this is also from the city council meeting last night. This is Caitlin from Stop the Sweeps.
Hi. My name is Caitlin, and I organize with Stop the Sweeps as well as Western Regional Advocacy Project. I think a lot of you have heard from me before. I spoke at all of the public listening sessions. I have been in many meetings with you all. I have been doing research on this topic for quite a few years now, including many public records requests. And a lot of those records requests is the reason we even had an audit. It's the reason we were able to have this process even opened up. With all of that said, I've been so civil during this whole process, and honestly, it's gotten us nowhere. So like I was saying, the only reason we're even having this much public dialogue around this is because of all the work we've been doing for so many years. And honestly, it feels like a giant slap in the face to go through all of this and really bring this topic to the table. And all we really get out of it is a few listening sessions where we're not even being listened to. We're also getting a couple meetings with some of the city commissioners, but a lot of it feels really symbolic and not meaningful. This is juxtaposed to the fact that Portland Business Alliance is meeting with you all weekly. For some of you, it's probably even daily. And it's just, it's ridiculous. Like, honestly, I wanted to go over some of the parts of the contract that really frustrates me. But I can't do that in 2 minutes. And guess what? We weren't invited testimony either. So I don't know. It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, already this public testimony right now is in pure opposition to this contract. And I'm sure you're going to hear a lot more of that. And it just feels so weird and frustrating. Honestly, I could say something so eloquent, but at this point, I don't think there's much we can do except for really just shame you, because this is fucking shameful, really. I mean,
shame.
Yeah.
Shame.
So yeah, that was shame. Caitlin from Stop the Sweets, and everybody starts yelling shame. I just like that clip.
Yeah, but the part about how they're getting just symbolic meetings while the PBA are getting weekly, sometimes daily meetings is that's really frustrating, disheartening to hear. And these are people that, you know, our community put in power. So it's just good to know. It's just good to know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Next election season, maybe folks will change their minds. You know, it's just good to know. And we wouldn't know all of this, like Caitlin said, if it wasn't for all the work that that activists and organizations have been doing for so long. So mm-hmm. Now, after a 10-year contract, you have the opportunity to not renew it, and with all of this effort and all of these years of organizing, and they still choose to show where their alliance lies. So good to know.
Yeah. Well, we can move on to our next one. You know, speaking of taking on some contest for elected officials, Clackamas County Commissioner Mark Scholl shared a meme on Facebook that compared COVID restrictions to the Holocaust. Everybody else on the council condemned him. I don't know if they're taking action against him. This isn't the first time he's done it either. Not the Holocaust specifically, but like in June, he compared COVID restrictions or vaccine passports to Jim Crow laws, which he was, I believe, like, the other city commissioners voted to, like, limit his ability to be a liaison between groups in the county commission. And there's been an ongoing effort, or I guess not ongoing, since January, there's a recall Mark Scholl effort that has been collecting signature pledges, because he's also spouted a lot of xenophobic, Islamophobic, transphobic rhetoric before and during his time as a Clackamas County Commissioner.
Interesting. I'm interested to know if maybe there's even a website to the recall Mark Scholl efforts, and maybe to like recallmarkscholl.com or something. I don't know, but if it is out there, you know, it might be worth a look to just kind of see, you know, in person some of these things. It's just like really outrageous. You're just, keep that stuff to yourself. If you're going to be doing this, keep it to yourself. Like, but just the fact that, you know, people feel the gall and like the backing and the confidence in posting stuff like this, it's like there's a serious problem in the environment where it's allowing you to feel so comfortable doing this. So in another recall effort to someone that, again, we put in charge, and we can also undo that. You know, it's an effort, but mm-hmm. it is possible. And I don't know, is it recallmarkscholl.com? Is that what I saw? I think maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I can do a little digging and put it on our episode page. Yeah, and just his defense of it, you know, they were like, hey, Mark, that was actually really anti-Semitic. Would you mind apologizing for that? And he says, no, it's not anti-Semitic, actually. A constituent sent me that meme. First of all, stop sharing memes on Facebook. Second of all, just because someone sends you something doesn't mean you need to repost it. And it also was very obviously anti-Semitic. So it's a head scratcher, you know. Not really. It's, you know, this is a very well established pattern of bigotry that he espouses, really at the drop of a hat. You know, there's a lot. There's maybe you can make a well reasoned argument as to why COVID restrictions are harmful, if that's the case that you want to make. But in no way does it compare to the Holocaust.
I'm just shaking Lord. My head here, and I'm just like, oh, yeah. What is going on? And unfortunately, this isn't the first elected official, and specifically Queen Franklin Commissioner, to make these type of draw these type of conclusions. Starrett, the county commissioner in Yamhill, also made a connection somehow between the vaccine mandates and Jim Crow, and it's like, y'all, if you are going to have to, why? It's beyond me. I mean, it's not beyond me, but it's just kind of, it's like the gall, like the gall. You really going to do this? That's unfortunate, you know? Unfortunate.
Yeah, it's just really disgusting, especially like, you know, as an elected official who, you know, has something to gain out of that conversation, to like exploit these very like, you know, awful moments in history and say like, hey, this is bad because it's like that. It's really gross. It's really gross. And hey, I'll say it, I'm neither of their constituents. I wouldn't want them to be my commissioner. I wouldn't want them making decisions about what happens where I live. And I wouldn't want them making decisions about, you know, policies that could impact people I care about.
I can't agree with you more. But as we are seeing, thankfully, and, you know, even in our follow-up for part two, in which we take community questions, and you can call in just a little bit, the people are speaking out. You know, they're truly standing up to these notions that elected officials and just people in power have that just go completely against the constituency, and just in some cases, you know, dignity of other people, especially marginalized groups. So people are speaking out in this, and there has been so much mobilizing to hold people accountable, at least on the grassroots level. And you know, we're seeing a lot of this stuff is local too. So I just realized a lot of our stuff today is local. All of it's local. Good for us.
Mm-hmm.
Good for us.
Good
for
us. Serving our old
good for
community.
The people
Very
of Oregon.
Cool.
We're doing it.
Well, yeah, and now that you mentioned that, I'm like, whoa, the through line of everything we're talking about today is that, like, you know, the power is with the people. That kind of goes into our next topic. We wanted to touch on that, you know, Nabisco workers did win an improved contract. We had mentioned that last week, I think, that it was a 5-week strike that started in Portland, and the contract is improved. You know, the strike in Portland was, you know, like more radical, more intense than in other places across the country. And, you know, the union as a whole in other cities voted more in favor than Portland workers did. But it's very interesting, you know, like the power, like improve their working conditions. So they got their health care protected. They improved their 401k, I believe. And there were, like, you know, special shifts on the weekend that are like 12-hour shifts. That was something that, you know, when the strike began, Portland strikers were very, like, that was one of their central things, is like, you change the alternative work week, no one gets overtime anymore. And so the new contract gives, you know, workers that don't have that shift first dibs on that weekend shift if they want to have it, which is kind of interesting. There's a good Willamette Week article that kind of goes through all of these things, and shouts out cable host of Labor Radio, Jamie Partridge, for helping out. Shout out to Jamie Partridge.
Heck yeah, Labor Radio doing the thing here in KBOO. and the people, you know, on the line, they were, it blows my mind. They were met with violence. Mm-hmm. And again, by private security. There's a lot of connective tissues here in these stories. If I hope that listeners are noticing that. I'm reading here in the article that you mentioned, the Willamette, that the Teamster actually filed a federal lawsuit against the security guard. So
yeah, these got pushed up against a car and like hit a bunch of times.
Yeah, these wins they don't come for free. They definitely come at a price. Mm-hmm. and this is just a little part of a much greater fight for, like, again, human decency and just our basic rights to be, you know, to have the right to work safely and all. And I really hope that we could get perhaps Jamie Partridge themselves to maybe talk with us in an interview in the upcoming few weeks. So that'll be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you know, get a little bit of a high note. You know, workers did get an improved contract. Maybe not everything that they had hoped for, but, you know, I think it's also just like such a powerful message to send. And I think that was part of what we talked about in regard to it last week, was, you know, where it fits into the labor movement as a whole, and that it got this national attention and that it was successful, you know, because, you know, the Amazon unionization effort in Alabama, I believe, was not successful, but still got a ton of attention. And so, you know, just like kind of like chipping away at it, I think is like really interesting and really powerful. And to have it come from Portland is fitting, I would say.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let us not forget, in the before times, there was also the Burgerville union, the Burgerville workers unionizing, I think Little Big mm-hmm. Burger as well. So this is definitely a momentum and all parts of a much larger picture.
Yeah. Well, do you think, Tammy, are we ready to hit that midway song and get on to our second half?
Yes, we are. Thank you for asking. And like we said before, you're listening to The Gap here on KBOO Portland. We are going on a very short, fantastic musical break, and we'll be back in just about a moment or two. So stay tuned. And we are back here on KBOO Portland. You're listening to The Gap. I am Tammy. On the line with me is my lovely co-host, Althea Billings. Hello, Althea.
Hello. Hey, it almost sounds like you were going to say cohort.
I was thinking horse, not like to force someone to do something. But moving on to our second part here on The Gap, this is where we take community calls from you, the listener. And again, the phone number is 503-231-8187. We are talking about the Newburgh District School Board. And as we mentioned in our previous program a few weeks ago, in August, the school... Oh man, this is just escalated massively. The school board decided that they want to ban all quote unquote political flags from the school, and they seem to specifically single out the BLM, Black Lives Matter, and Pride flags. Wondering why, right? We on the show talked about how it was not constitutional, and of course, this isn't the first time that a school has tried to do something like that. We talked about Tinker versus Des Moines and how that got to the Supreme Court and was ruled unconstitutional because students do have the right to express themselves politically. Although a lot of people can perhaps speak to the fact that some folks may not think that BLM flags, Black Lives Matter flags, or Pride flags are political. They're more of a signifier. Oh, I can't speak today. That this is like a safe space for people who are marginalized, who are from the folks of color, Indigenous, Black, queer, trans, and anything in between. So the school board's decision during the summertime to ban these flags was kind of odd. A lot of the people, teachers, some staff members, and of course students were just really baffled as to why they decided to do it during that time. Fast forward to now, during the month of September, a lot has evolved since then. The Newburgh High School was found. There's some Newburgh High School students that were involved in a Snapchat group that was titled Slave Trade, in which some of their Black classmates were, you can imagine, I don't really want to get into the details, but it was incredibly inappropriate and just caused a lot of damage to and harm to not just Black students, but of course, mainly the Black students, families, and members of the community, but to just everyone. But that's not it. Just when you thought it was finished, oh no, no, no. It gets even worse. A middle school teacher also decided to show up in protest of the vaccine mandates at the Newburgh District School District, decided to show up in a Rosa Parks costume, which consisted of the teacher dyeing, making their face darker and flesh darker, so, blackface, basically. And so that's kind of where we are now. Oh, excuse me. On the 22nd, the school district held a special meeting Wednesday night, so just a couple of days ago, in which the members of the board did not speak, but let people who signed up to speak, just kind of express themselves. And we do have an audio of that. But before I play that, Althea, any thoughts around that, just where we're at with the story now?
Let me find a good phrase to sum up how like upsetting it is and how, the official action right by the school board to try to ban Black Lives Matter and Pride flags is not, it is like symptomatic of a root cause, right? That there, I believe it was a special education assistant that showed up in blackface. That was something that as an educator you would think is appropriate, that students are running a racist Snapchat group, right? Like it all is painting a broader picture than it just being, the school board taking this sort of patriarchal action or patronizing action, I guess, of saying like, oh, you kids, you can't have quote unquote political symbols that are really just, you know, supporting people who otherwise oftentimes do not feel supported in the school system, especially, you know, somewhere like Newburgh. And that's really what students were expressing. And so just we have a clip of what students were saying at the Newburgh comment session. One interesting thing I'll point out is that there were 40 speakers lined up, 20 on each side, because the head of the school board, there were like 50 more people that wanted to talk that didn't get selected, but they did have an ideological question that folks had to fill out in their request. And so it went basically back and forth between people opposed and people who supported the ban. And we'll talk more about that in a second, but here's what some of the students were saying.
Hello, board members. My friends and I are here tonight to express our concerns over the board's recent activities. It is extremely insensitive and disrespectful to take down flags to represent a minority group of people. It shows a lot of ignorance to think that banning those flags is going to make the problem disappear. Those who have been murdered by the police deserve recognition and not to be ignored. That may not affect you personally, but it affects me a lot. Those people were killed because of their skin color, something you can't change. There is science behind being LGBTQ+. You don't choose how you identify. Don't tear down communities that you can't relate to or understand.
The school board was elected to serve the students and to do what's best for us, including listening to our wants and needs. BLM and Pride flags create a safe environment for students and make them feel like valued members of our community. The Pledge of Allegiance ends with liberty and justice for all. By taking down these flags, you're saying that minority students are not welcomed. That is disregarding our nation's pledge. Growing up in Newburgh has taught me to value diversity and celebrate our differences. Please don't change this message.
We're all living through a pandemic, but for those BIPOC and LGBTQ+ members of our community, this adds more struggle onto an already devastating year. Your job is to protect students, to do what's best for us. As a student at Mountain View Middle School myself, I can say this is not what is best for us. You claim that Pride and Black Lives Matter flags are a distraction, but taking them down is more of one. Teachers tiptoe around the conversation spread by this action, by your action, because to tell us that what you are doing is right, it would be to tell us that minority students do not deserve to be loved and that they do not belong, because that is what taking away the symbols of their acceptance means to these students in our community. Okay.
Seeing people we relate to being hurt and discriminated against is scary. It makes us feel like there is danger lurking around every corner, which is why a BLM sign or a pride flag can be so powerful. It makes us feel like this is a safe space, somewhere where we can be ourselves and know that we are respected regardless of our ethnicity, sexuality, or gender.
Please consider being more responsible with me and my friends' parents' tax dollars. Instead of spending money on lawyers for cases you've gotten yourself into, spend money on improving curriculum, hiring more educators, buying better masks for students, improving extracurricular activities, improving counseling, etc.
Many times in these meetings, I've heard people argue that racism isn't a problem in Newburgh. But look at what happened on Snapchat and at Mabel Rush. That is here and that is now. Taking down these signs makes it seem like it is okay to treat BIPOC students as if they are less. Is that the message you wish to convey? Thank you for your time. Please consider what we have said and end this petty argument so that we can tackle other important issues rather than tearing down positive representation for those who are often underrepresented in our society.
Thank you.
And that was some of the students from the Newburgh School District speaking with the school board. The babies are really, they are, I couldn't even listen to it without crying. Like it was just so, so beautiful. And it is online. The whole spiel. It's about 2 hours long. That's just 3 minutes of just that. That was pretty overall the overall sentiment coming from the students. Of course, there was other points of views as well. that did not come from the students, I'm like, okay, this is no point of that in my opinion. But we do have a caller on the line. Edie, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you just fine.
I would like us to have some clarity about this issue. If they were saying they did not want anything political, they have to recognize that anything having to do with a human being or a group of human beings is always political and religious, because it always deals with the sense of what is real, what's unreal, what's cause and effect, what's good and bad, what's the individual, what's the community, what's the rights, responsibilities. It always has to do with what is seeable and what's not seeable. It always has to do with power in the individual or group, hierarchy or horizontal. So everything having to do with humans is always political and religious. It's just that if it's your own beliefs and you seem to think that what you believe is reality, then you take that for granted. But if it's someone different, then you think, oh, that's religious or political if it's theirs, not mine. I'm right, they're just religious or political. But the purpose of education is for us to be honestly aware of reality, to care, and to be accountable, and to ever expand our responsibility and our privilege and rights to make the world better as we better ourselves. And that means justice for everybody. Even if I were coming from a very selfish view, if there is disparity economically, politically, nutritionally, whatever, housing, I mean, whatever you think as a disparity, that bigger the gap, the bigger my insecurity and anxiety, and the worse my physical health. So even if I were just the most selfish, bigoted, evil person, for my own self, I would have to make sure that everybody has their needs met. And part of the political and religious perspective is whether you think we live in a place where there's not enough good, and whether that is true, whether it's appropriate to steal from others, or if there is enough good to go around. If he claims to be Christian, there is nothing in Jesus' teaching that at all excuses or allows religious or racial or gender bigotry or injustice. And to have the American flag is extremely political, and it's totally against my politics for a public school setting. And the Pledge of Allegiance, which was developed to sell flags with a false religion, which is an imposition itself. The Pledge of Allegiance itself is a violation of the Constitution. Not that the Constitution is so great as white man's slavery materialism. But we need to be honest that everything they do is already political and religious. So they need to be honest and recognize the fairness. And second of all, if they say, oh, but we don't want anyone to feel uncomfortable. Well, life involves growing pain. Life involves discomfort. And the purpose of education is to recognize the different forms of discomfort and how to cope with it and what that discomfort teaches us. If I'm in extreme pain with stress fractures from running 100 miles in the mountains, like my daughter just did, then that pain is telling me, get off your foot, let it rest. But if they're saying we can't have white fragility feel discomforted by having to rethink our status and injustice when we are oppressing the world and every species on the planet, well then good, get uncomfortable and do something about it, repent. And we need to also have compassion.
Edie, thank you so much. You are speaking, as they say, truth to power, and I really appreciate your point of view. And yeah, I think even whether we want to or not, unfortunately, all of our identities are politicized, and the more marginalized that you are, the more racialized that you are, and you know, the more that it's visible as well, the more difficult it is. And thank you for that, Edie. Althea, any thoughts? Also, callers, please call in 503 231-8187 to join in on the conversation on the Newburgh School District decision and student follow-up that we just heard.
Right. I think that Edie makes a good point here that, like, distinguishing those particular flags, Black Lives Matter and Pride flags, as political in the scope of when, you know, they have arguably this much different effect of indicating a level of inclusivity for underrepresented people, like saying that that's political, it's like, well, everything is political. So if you want to start tugging at that thread, you better be ready for the entire sweater to unravel. But I also think that, you know, it's important to not just like obscure the argument entirely, and also say that, you know, we're talking about that there is a human cost to this, that it will have a real impact on people. And one thing about this, you know, comment session that the Newburgh School Board held, they had essentially equal representation of, you know, who of supporting and opposing. But it's notable that no local students, no Newburgh students spoke in favor of the ban. The people that spoke in favor of it did not, by and large, make their connection to the school district clear. Or they were students, they live in Newburgh and they were students at Newburgh decades ago. So I think that that, like, clarifies some of this. There's a quote from the Newburgh graphic. A 2019 valedictorian of Newburgh High School, Mariah Reed, made the comment, "Never once did a student come with a concern that a BLM or pride flag was a distraction to their learning. This culture war threatens the lives of students. There are consequences to your actions. The blood of my peers will be on your hands." And that's really, like, I mean, when we talked about it the first time, Sonia pointed this out, that, you know, win, lose, or draw for the folks that passed this, it is, you know, meaningful to the people who would support them, you know, and to everybody else, it is, you know, unenforceable because it's patently unconstitutional. It's a waste of money because they're going to fight it with lawyers. But either way, whether they, you know, succeed, which is highly unlikely, or they fail, then they become martyrs for this cause. There's a lot here, but we do have a caller on the line, Camille. How you doing, Camille?
Camille.
Oh, hi.
I would have liked to have heard some of those comments that were in favor of the ban, what their reasoning was.
Yeah, and I can read you some of their quotes if you'd like.
The reason that I'm saying this is because I think the political issues are really obvious, and you know, debate has followed along those lines. But I think there's something even deeper and more meaningful, and that is, what is the logic and what is the meaning of the idea they're claiming that is the justification for this, that it distracts? What does that really mean? And I heard you say distracts from learning, but why should it distract from learning? Because in fact it's a lesson, and I think the implications are that what it distracts from is the real history that this implies, the history of slavery, the history of discrimination, the history of awful treatment of differently gendered people. And it seems like it's in effect censorship of what the truth is, and it's very similar to the critical race theory argument that some mm-hmm. school boards are coming out against. So I mean, I think, you know, the real significance and meaning of what is happening is kind of obscured by the political discussion. And I think it would really be interesting to hear an intellectual debate between the different sides that emphasize these aspects that I'm suggesting are really the meaning of all of this.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, to that point, I do have a couple quotes in front of me from folks. I don't know or not you would consider their arguments to be especially high-minded. One quote, this is again from the Newberg Graphic, John Kitchen from the class of 2002 said, "School is a place for learning. It is not a place to push what you believe onto young minds. We voted out a majority liberal board and voted in a conservative board." Another 23-year-old Newberg resident, David Klaus, said, "Schools should be places of learning, not ideological petri dishes for indoctrination." There's other folks who said that Mark Colby, Newberg resident, anti-racist policy is actually racist in itself, and then went on to talk about how George Floyd was a convicted felon, which, you know, we can work to unpack that as well. So that's kind of where a lot of folks are coming from, I think, is the idea of indoctrination.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and it makes me wonder. You said having an intelligent conversation about it, and I definitely agree with you. And there's definitely room for nuance and all of that. But I wonder, in my opinion, since the most affected people in this situation are the students, and also like obviously the students who do identify with marginalized groups. Is to kind of like hear from them and their point of view, because we've had our chance to learn and study these things, and they're kind of like the most affected, and in a way, in my personal opinion, kind of like are having that opportunity robbed from them because someone else is doing that same thing that, you know, the people are saying, or like they're imposing their either fragility or just their personal beliefs onto something as it's education system of like it's high school, it's middle school, it's elementary school. Like, geez, that's
yeah.
And it's public school, you know. And in doing research for this, a couple of the people who are on staff were saying that, quite frankly, they're going to take they're going to take their kids to private school because they really just they're quite embarrassed of what's happening in the school system and. They don't want to be associated with it. And also, to make it even kind of like more bizarre, the mayor, the city council, the ACLU, the Newberg Student Union all opposed this, including the Oregon and the U.S. Constitution. The Yamhill County Commissioner, not the one that I mentioned before, they are all like, please don't do this. Please stop. This is not appropriate for a myriad of reasons. And the school board is going to make a vote on whether or not they're going to rescind the ban on Tuesday on the 28th. So this is like, you know, it's happening. It's like truly happening in real time. I think that, you know, the future is going to truly judge us. And I mean, I'm judging right now. I'm not going to wait. You know, I don't mind judging.
Yeah.
And a lot of this is making national news because, wow, is this going to be kind of like whatever happens here is going to, in my opinion, be a blueprint for other states and other counties and other school districts, you know? And this isn't just the only thing. This is a thing of mixing. I mean, geez, between the blackface and the slave trade Snapchat group, I'm just, and the ban itself, I'm just like, what is, Newberg, are you okay? That's all I want to say.
Well, and I think that, you know, while it would be maybe nice in one sense to have like an intellectual conversation about, you know, the merits of it, I think it would also be in some way giving the people who put this in place more credit than they are due, because I don't think genuinely they care too much about, you know, indoctrination and what is really being put through the school system and what children are learning, especially it's been more than a decade since you've been in school, you know, like the Common Core standards are way different than they used to be, people. So I think that trying to engage it on a higher footing than it was, you know, originally conceived on gives it more credit than it is due, because I don't think that it's especially high-minded. I think that it's pretty plainly, you know, comes from a place of fragility and like a bigoted place.
Yes, and we do, Camilla, you are still on the line, so I just wanted to let you wrap up and we can move on to our next caller. Camilo, are you still on the line? Oh, that's fine. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, those are really good points. And Camilo, if you'd like to, please feel free to call back. The idea that the fragility is real, it is real. And yeah, people are looking, you know, they're saying, what's going on, Newberg? Are you okay? I also wanted to mention that in doing some research, I also found that in the district, the Newberg district, the only about 1% of the student body is does identify as Black. So this is scary. It's like you're sitting in a room and no one looks like you, and you have, and you know that this is the type of stuff that goes on Snapchat. Like, that's terrifying.
Yeah. And if anyone else wants to chime in, please give us a call, 503-231-8187. Yeah, the consequences are real. I did think it was maybe worth pointing out that somebody in the comment period who was supportive of the ban said, quote, many people who support the school board are afraid to come forward for fear of retribution. Please show tolerance to people who have an opinion you don't like, which... it's a little ironic, I would say. But also, you know, just like what fear of retribution, you know, and you come out here preaching tolerance. I have to be tolerant of you being hateful. We're going around in circles now.
Yes, and we do have another caller on the line with us. Caller, can you hear us?
I can. I'll turn my radio down, make sure we're not feedbacking. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, hi.
Hey, I just, you know, I didn't even know this was happening. I feel so closed off in the world, but I live in the Willamette Valley and was just in Newport, and I'm like almost ashamed I supported that community in any way, because if it's run by all of these, you know, older white people that are not even older. You said there was a 23-year-old person who's like, oh, school should not be a place for indoctrination. Like, that is... I think that literally speaks to what one of you said. It's like we could give room to this higher-minded conversation and potentially have it, but at the same time, like, what they're saying is not coming from that higher-minded place. Like, it's actually coming from a super backwards place that our country a lot of the times comes from, at least where I live, in a very white America, you know? And it's such a shameful... perspective. Like, it doesn't deserve any high-minded attention. It deserves a constitutional shutdown, because, like you said, it's unconstitutional. It's completely ridiculous. It literally is what I hear them saying when you heard who said those quotes was, we would like to indoctrinate our students with white supremacy, not with openness and communication and the life of somebody else different, looking different from you. Like, we don't want that kind of indoctrination, quote unquote, because that is full spectrum, right? That is including other people. And God forbid that happen in that 1%, right? You said 1% of students identifying African American. Like, it's such a shame, and it needs to be absolutely shut down, and I think totally not given the time of day in that way of, like, yeah, we could have a legitimate debate with you and prove how you're continuing to be racist and think you're superior by trying to enforce this thing when every student, you said, like, there are no students that spoke for this measure, right? It was all students speaking against it, and those are the voices that need to be listened to. That's, I think, my biggest, you know, point. That's who I want to hear from.
I totally agree with you. Yeah, totally agree with you. Thank you so much for your comment and for calling in. We do have a bunch of more people on the line with us, and I'm going to get
them. We probably got time for one more, don't you think?
Yes, Althea, if you could just keep talking for a second till I get these phone lines working.
Yeah, certainly. I want to say that I appreciate everybody calling in and, you know, staying attentive to this issue. And I know, I'm sure that, you know, highlighting the voices of students and supporting people, because there have been, like, creative ways that they've gotten support. A couple weeks ago, I know that folks who, like, lived across from the school put up a billboard that said Black Lives Matter, kind of in protest of this, but in, you know, visibility of the high school,
yeah.
which is kind of like interesting and creative.
Yes, and we do have another caller on the line. You are on the line with us, caller. How are you, and what is your comment?
Is this me, Rafa?
Yep.
Hi. So I'm a black man born and raised in Portland, Oregon. Went to the schools of Central Portland, Oregon, and I'm very well aware of the struggles and the plight with regards to socializing racism and in the schools. What I'm not clear on is that at what point did the Black Lives Matter flag and or movement and other flags that represent social movements, at what point did it become okay in the first place to begin to have to not necessarily indoctrinate, but to begin to have to teach and explain to students in the school what that is about? I have four children in the Portland public school system right now, three at Boise Elliott and one at Tubman, and I have been very taken aback by what they have been teaching from when it started, from when Mr. Trump won the presidency. They began to teach my children in the schools that Trump was a bad man long before we ever knew who and what he was. Now, I don't want to sound strange on this, but as a black man, very involved, I have, my wife is black, my children are black, I have no interest in trying to teach white people anything about my blackness or who and what we are. We know what it is in America, and we move and act accordingly. But at what point was it okay, or did the BLM flag begin to represent black thought? Because that doesn't represent black thought. That's a political movement that has been politicized right on down to Newburgh, Oregon, which is a little school and a town that's up and coming with the wine industry and the money that's being brought to this area, and now they're politicizing something for black people that don't represent, that don't represent black people. That represents white people in a politicized usage of black lives that have been killed by police, being politicized from George Floyd on, and I can call the roll. So I need you all to understand that, because you all are running a narrative that's not true to the ground.
I appreciate your perspective and point of view. We have to wrap up, and I just wanted to give some space to what you said, because that's, all black folks don't think the same. So I appreciate you calling in and, you know, just giving us that perspective. There is so much to unpack there, but unfortunately we are completely out of time. I just want to say that the BLM flag, or just seeing the words Black Lives Matter, mean different things to different people in, you know, in the black community. And not everyone feels the same about it. Me personally, as a black woman, when I see it, and as the students in the Newburgh School District mentioned to them, the voices that in this piece matter the most, in my opinion, they also express the same. It gives them a sense of security, makes them feel safe in an otherwise unsafe environment. There's so much to unpack. I definitely agree with a lot of what you have to say when it comes to how much has been politicized by non-black people, and that is definitely problematic. Unfortunately, I do have to wrap up. Thank you so much for that call. Thank you so much for the perspective. Thank you, everyone, for calling in. This has been The Gap here on KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Arab Voices. Thank you so much, Althea.
Bye.